Welcome to American Gypsy Podcast. I'm your host, Gypsy. And today we have a special guest, Roberto Capodieci. He is a serial entrepreneur with businesses spanning three continents and an expert in decentralization, peer-to-peer systems, and blockchain. Welcome to the show, Roberto.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you. And where are you based out of? Give us a little background on what you do.
Sure. I grew up in Venice, Italy. Then I spent a decade in Florida. And now it's 20 years that I am in Bali, Indonesia, tropical island. We live only one time. People go on holiday to these places. Why not to live here directly, right?
Yeah. What made you pick Bali to move to?
It's been a very random thing. I was in LA, in Los Angeles, working on an application. And at the time, the online chatting system were not like advanced like today. So you wouldn't have a saved username. So you need to remember things. And I had annotation in a notebook and I was chatting with somebody from Boston. They had a particular username and they broke in the house and they stole computers and everything. So I purchased a new computer and I wouldn't remember the username of this person. And I go searching, I found somebody. It was actually somebody in Bali. And, you know, I couldn't connect anymore with the previous person, but I become friend with this person in Bali. So later on, I wanted to take a holiday. And I've been in Bali when I was a little kid with my father, but I didn't know anything. So with the support of somebody that I met online, I've been able to take the leap and come here. And I fell in love. Like most of the foreigner living here is people that have been here in holiday for a month or plus, and then went back, sold everything and moved here because it's really a unique place. I don't know if anymore. At the time, 20 years ago, it was like this.
What do you feel like changed from the past till now?
So when I first arrived, if I see another foreigner tourist, we look at each other like, you know, oh, I'm not alone here. Now, if I see a local person, a Balinese, I'm going to look at them like, oh, there is still be somebody because it's so overgrown. I think the movie Eat, Pray, and Love is what created the big, massive income of these 40-plus ladies searching for replicating what they saw in the movie or read in the book. And then where I'm living in land, a place called Ubud, is one of the other capital of this new age yoga destination. So there is a lot of people from California making base here as well. So it's a is over, let's say, tourism or actually permanent residents from outside, expats, what you want to call them, are becoming a lot compared to what it was in the past. So that probably ruined a little bit that is the magic that the place had, but it's still a fantastic place to live. And nonetheless, I even married the local after divorce. This is my third, fourth marriage, so something like that. So.
Okay. Yeah, I know it's becoming a popular destination. Well, it has been a popular destination for digital nomads and a lot of expats.
That's correct. That's this be this is the digital nomad one is the latest wave of people. They stay more in the south of the island, but there is being a lot of very in the niche famous people, people that created what concerned me mostly piece of technologies that are very important. So we had the different waves of kind of people coming here in these 20 years that I'm here, from people doing jewelry. There is an American guy called John Hardy that created a huge industry with silver here. And then he sold everything, created a school. There is a unique school. It's called Green School, all made in bamboo in the jungle. It's fantastic. And, you know, there are a lot of very special things that, you know, have happened here. It's a very strange, unique place. So I kind of love it. It's a land of opportunities because everything is cheap to do. So if you fail, you don't lose big. If you succeed, you can make good money. So nice.
Are you just living there or do you run your business out of Bali as well?
Yeah, I mean, technology, Singapore, which is a couple of hours of flight from here to 3 hours from here, is really the belly button of the planet. Now Dubai is the big place for technology, but Singapore is also one important hub and is nearby. So the basis of my business is there. but living quality of life easier. So when I need, I take an airplane and I go there. It's okay. Three of my four kids have been born here in Bali, even though they don't have an Indonesian pass. Only one has an Indonesian passport, the last one, but yeah.
I know you started your first business when you were 14. What was that, and what inspired you to start business?
Right, I started learning IT coding, electronic stuff when I was very little, like age 5, like this, with the help of my father. And by the time I was 10, I started the club. We were doing electronics coding, and by the age of 14, I was already implementing software that was used in businesses. So, with the authorization of the court for minors, we created a company, and like a legal company, and I started implementing software, quite innovative for the time. And yeah, I started making business, and I've been creating company, selling them, some closing them for all my life. I've been employed in one occasion only, but not for my desire. It was a way to save a marriage, but which didn't work anyway. So the condition she had, I would be an employer, not an entrepreneur. I don't know why.
So, how did you get into blockchain? When did you get into it?
Yeah, that's interesting. I've been always interested in communication, telecommunications. So the phone system was something I was fascinated since I was a little kid. I would spend all my days outside playing the phone booth, dialing strange numbers, see what happened. And this idea of communicating remotely, I also had the CB radio and all these things, which are all part of the idea of communicating. And what is a peer-to-peer network? What are, even before the internet, there were some networks that you can access in similar ways. So these all led for me to be in the right place at the right moment where blockchain was started, when peer-to-peer network were started. I can explain briefly what a peer-to-peer network is for those
Yeah, please do.
that
Some of the audience
don't
might
know.
need
But
to.
so yeah, so that's what I happened to be in the right place, even though I wasn't interested in cryptocurrencies, I was interested in other things. A peer-to-peer network, for those that don't know, is the network made by many computers, where no computer is more important than the others. So there is no one central computer or server that control everything. So there is no central point of failure. It's just a bunch of computers. They interact with each other, and no computer is essential for the network. So you can kill one or two servers, but the network's still up. You can add any server at any moment. So it's like an animal living his own life. That's why it's very fascinating. And there is no way to kill it. It's international through the internet. So there will be, even for illegal activities, when they are based on a peer-to-peer network, law enforcement has no means to stop it, because it will take a coordinated law enforcement work between 140 country plus to go and shut it down completely, and easily it's going to restart after a while. So it's a very interesting piece of technology that has its own life, very democratic, if you want, because it's made by people supporting it. And is the base for many things. It's the base for Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, but is the base also for BitTorrent, where people download movies or music, piracy, online, and is the base for many other important functionality. What is the beauty is that remove the man in the middle, so you can have a two party interacting directly with each other without having to trust a third party to manage the communication. So, I mean, Skype work in a peer-to-peer network, but not exactly in the way that I described before, because there are some more important nodes. And after Microsoft acquired it, it became more centralized. But originally it was born really without a central server, central parts. It was very powerful. So this is what I work on. I transform a centralized system in the centralized system. So when there is something that a group of company consortium use a big data center to manage things, and they are afraid of attack, if I've been compromised or other things, or they need to they don't want people to have to trust this data center for their data. They can decentralize the system or make an hybrid solution where they interact with each other and they have the guarantee that the data is true. There is no way of compromising the data or tampering with it.
What are some examples of industries that you work with?
Yeah, the best, there are best use cases, which is the supply chain, for example. Supply chain have a party from different countries. And if you think different countries, different legislation, different languages, different forms. That's why as of today, international trade, the minimum common denominator is paper and pen. So they still use courier to send each other documents, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they can use email, they can use a fax machine, which many people still don't know what they are, but pieces of museum. But a peer-to-peer network with some defined rules will guarantee this party the work together that the rules are respected in the exchange of data or the flow of processes or things. So it's very interesting. It's a new technology, it's slowly taking step because it's difficult to understand for people. The advantages is very difficult to shift to something new. It's more a bottom-up approach when there are solutions that people adopt and they force large institutions to adapt to the technology, like happened with cryptocurrency, for example, and the financial industry that where they were scared. No, it's bad, bad, bad. Now they are working with it as well, so.
What do you feel like are some of the biggest security challenges in this area?
In the world of IT, in the world of hackers and, breaches, the biggest security challenge is people, no computer and machine. People are gullible. They get fooled to open application that allow remote access or, we saw it happening constantly over and over. In the technology aspect itself, I think that there's slow adoption is given by regulators. There are silly situations, like look at financial industry, for example. Banks still want you to send things via fax. Not because banks are back in 1900, but because the regulator consider a valid document those sent via fax and not those sent in a different manner. For example, as a scan inside email that's not yet regulated as a valid system. Not, I mean, some country, yes, in other not. And so the common minimum denominator, the standard remains the lowest that the regulators recognize as a valid system. And that's why technology sometimes offer huge opportunities, but they cannot be applied to a lot of industries simply because by law, they are not valid. So in terms of security, if you think the mechanics on how a credit card works, only recently they start having an online double verification before you spend money, but it is one of the less secure system in the planet. You can just look at somebody's card and you can spend because all the information to make a purchase are on the card. So that shows that there is not so much concern about this kind of security. So a system that work with cryptography, because peer-to-peer network blockchain work with cryptography, is mathematically much more safe and much more secure the current existing system. So by default, it's just less prone to attacks compared to what is being used at the moment. But nothing will be absolutely safe and secure from attacks because obviously, there is always a way around things. There is, it's not, it's, you know, every day they discover flows and every day they fix and tomorrow they discover. Look how many times your Windows computer updates for security reason is every other day, right?
Yeah. Are there any projects that you're excited about that you follow closely and are bullish on?
Okay,
whether
so,
it's crypto or any platform?
Yeah, one thing is important to understand. What is the biggest revolution this blockchain have brought to the world of information technology. Because once people understand this, they understand the opportunity and the revolution that can be. Because many people think blockchain is a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, which is money to do, you know, like illegal stuff. But if you think something, so we entered this digital era, age, whatever you want to call after the industrial age, right? And we start digitizing what was analog. So a vinyl disc become a CD, the video VHS videotape become a DVD. And what we're doing now, we're streaming video, there is data, right? So with the internet, we can, you know, send this data around. But whatever was digital can be easily copied. If you think the music and movie industry had no big issue when people were making pirate cassettes with the with the music, because after you copy three times, the quality will fall so low that it makes sense to buy the original. But as soon as music became digital, then they start being very concerned, because when you copy a CD, the copy is one-to-one identical to the original, because the same one and zero that produce the music and the sound are in the copy. So there is no degradation of quality of sound. And suddenly, and this worked for DVD, et cetera, et cetera. So the industry started getting concerned, because there is no need to buy the original anymore if my copy is identical to the original, right? So how, when you have an MP3 song, you can make 10 copies, give it to 10 friends, and now there are 11 MP3 songs that are identical. You don't know which is the original anymore. So there is no value, because it's the flash inventory. So in the moment that I have only one piece, one vinyl disc original from 1970, whatever, of this group, I can sell it for a lot of money. But if I have the original MP3, which millions of copies can be made, it loses value, because where I have a receipt that I purchased it, what is the originality, right? But if you think something, if I send my Bitcoin to you, besides you being very happy about it, but I don't have it anymore. So my Bitcoin now is with you, and I don't have, I cannot copy and paste my Bitcoin and send it to you, the copy, because that Bitcoin will be worth zero. So you have a digital item. So you cannot touch it. It's just a piece of bit of data, which is unique. So it becomes like a physical object. I give it to you, I don't have it anymore. That's why it is a big craze of NFTs with the monkeys start worth a million. Not because this silly drawing worth a lot, but because what was exciting is the concept that you can own a piece of digital art, and is unique, is yours. People can make copies, but it's a copy. The original is the one that the blockchain says is yours. And this is the huge revolution. So if you translate this potentiality into practical daily things, the title of your car can be perfectly an NFT. Rather than representing a monkey, is going to represent that the ownership of this car belongs to you. And if you want to sell your car to somebody, you transfer the NFT with the title of your car to this other person in exchange of money, whatever. So in exchange of crypto, which can happen automatically. So the escrow system can be done inside the blockchain itself. If it doesn't put the money, the title doesn't go to them. So you're guaranteed that you only give away your title when the money are with you. There is no way of cheating it, because it's guaranteed by mathematics, right? So in this logic, you can create validations of facts, because cryptographic signature can be connected to identities. You can have the fact that, for example, if you want to register to the gym, they request your health certificate released by a doctor. So if the government, when given the university degree or recognize a doctor, says that his cryptographic identity is a doctor, the doctor can issue a health certificate in the blockchain signed by a doctor, which is provable, because you can prove it online that in the blockchain itself that his identity belongs to a doctor authorized to do this. You can hand over this electronically to the gym, and the gym can certify that you're healthy because that's what is written, and this document is cryptographically signed by a doctor that the government recognizes as doctors, and there is no way to cheat around there. A fake piece of paper I can do with Photoshop and print it and bring it to the gym, let's say, which would be a crime, but It's something that people do. So if you think like people discounting invoices in the bank, I do a job, I invoice, the client is going to pay me later, but I need the money now. I go to the bank, I discount the invoice. One regular scam people do, they go discount the same invoice in 10 different banks. They don't pay back. The first bank, they go to the client, get the money. The other nine lost everything. Because it's hard to prove that the same invoice has been discounted somewhere else, right? Because it's a piece of paper. If this is electronic, in a place where you can guarantee the quality of the data, then you cannot do this scam anymore. So the banks are guaranteed. So that there are a lot of possibilities, like source of origin of product in the supply chain. As I was telling you, we did project with the coffee industry, from plantation to the bar. When people drink the coffee, you can follow the torrefaction, everything that happened to that. For many other aspects, even the guarantee, you buy a very expensive watch or piece of clothing, the warranty is made as an NFT per se. So wherever you go in the world that they support this brand, they can check that the warranty is valid in the blockchain. So you don't need to have it with you. Like, there are a lot of possible and potential uses that are deployed. And what I do as a job is doing all the consulting and the implementation with a team of people for companies that want to shift to these technologies.
Yeah, I like hearing examples like that because I think most people, when they hear blockchain, they think crypto. But
right,
hearing about, which can kind of seem like, oh, is it a secure thing? It's just a gambling or something. But when you hear about real world applications, it seems to make a lot of things more secure than the centralized way we were doing it in the past. So it's,
yeah, and practical too, because it's online 24/7. Think like an example I was giving. I have my son that is on the other side of the planet traveling with a friend. It is Friday night, he has an accident. He asked me to send money there. Okay, now there are a lot of apps to do that. But in the classic system of the financial system, bank is closed. Until Monday, I cannot do anything, even though this is my money in the bank, right? With a Bitcoin, I can send him. When it's Saturday night, doesn't matter, he's instantly there, right? Because there is no middleman that created the bottleneck for the process of things. And this applies to everything else. I love one thing is in Google, in Gmail, if it's 3 in the morning, you try to send a mail, there is these things that you can set up. They ask you a mathematical operation, how much is 15 multiply 9? Because if you're drunk, they want to stop you from sending the wrong email that you regret
I
the
didn't
next
notice
morning.
that.
So with something like this, where there is no more man in the middle, you don't have anybody to call if you make a mistake. So it shifts a lot of responsibility to the person doing the thing. If the title of my car is on the blockchain and I am in a bar, I'm drunk, there is this beautiful lady, and I feel like I want to give her the present, my Porsche, and there is nothing stopping me from doing it because there is no middleman, there is no the AAA Association, whatever it's called, that may manage the titles and then tell me, no, it's not the case now, come back when you're sober and do things. So, there are two sides of the coin, if you want, on these things. But I do love and appreciate the fact that something that is decentralized is really in the hand of people using it more than a third party. Another example, think about the emails. When email first came out, okay, besides was totally impractical. People were saying email will never take over the fax, because with the fax, the only thing I need to do, write the letter, put it in there. I already know it's coming out on the other office. With email, I need to write it, connect to the internet. Remember the mother that was doing the sound. Then you need to send it out. Then people will picking up the phone, calling the other party, say, look, I sent you an email, go check. The other party need to turn on the computer, connect. So it was too much complex for it to work. No, like we know very, very well now that nobody uses a fax anymore because that's too complex, and emails works very well. But at the beginning of the email, every office and many houses have their own mail server. So when you send an email from your business to another business, the email goes from your computer to the mail server in your company, from the mail server in your company to the mail server of the other company, and they're going to read the email. Today, there are Google, Microsoft, and a couple more that manage all the mail in the world. So it's no more a network of mail servers that communicate to each other, but there are four companies that have the management of all the mail that there are in the world. And because the mail protocol is horrible, because it's been built decades ago, is all in clear. So they read everybody's email for marketing purposes, for whatever else. But, we lost the beauty of being something that is between people, and we built this man in the middle, which is very convenient because it's a beautiful service and whatever you want, but it's no more decentralized, it's no more distributed. So we want to try to go back to internet that is between people using it without middlemen that take advantage of this situation. Right?
Yeah. And do you only help companies decentralize their system, or are you also working on a platform, or do you have a platform or a software that you're working on?
Yeah, there is something that I took off like a sabbatic, and I did mentor startup during this time, and one particularly got me, and I became a shareholder and an active participant in it. And it's something very unique. Still with blockchain, one revolution in the gaming industry is that, let me explain one step before, because it's very interesting. You must have heard about the metaverse.
Yes.
Right? Okay, Web3. So what happened is that if you think how internet started, people had the websites. Come visit my website. This is my homepage, my homepage. It was all like everybody at their homepage, right? And thanks to the HTML, which is the hyperlink markup language, when you see a link in one homepage, in one page online, you go to another website. Say I write my blog post that says, yeah, I was under this tree, and I put the link, you click, and you go in the website. They talk about trees where you have all the detail of the tree. And then they click, you go to the location of a city, and you navigate the internet through this link. We don't do it anymore because we end up in a social media, we stay there all day. But that was the beauty also in the decentralized content. It was distributed between many small servers, which isn't happening anymore, right? The way that the HTML created this World Wide Web, what they were calling it, was the connection between contents. But you as a user, you were not part of it. You were passively consuming this content. You can only decide where to go. So much that when you need to log into a website, each website has its own username and password. So you have a different identity for each website where you register.
Yeah.
The revolution that a blockchain can bring is what Web3 is the fact that your identity remains the same among many different websites, because your cryptographic signature, which you use to log in and no more username and a password, is the same. So much that if I can connect something, for example, I think a very important brand of jewelry, okay, I'm not going to make the name, but made a piece of jewelry that only people that had owned one of those NFT monkeys could buy the piece of jewelry. If you don't own it, you cannot buy. How they did this, they made people log in with the same account where the monkeys owned. So when I purchase the NFT of the monkey, is connected to my cryptographic identity. I use that identity to log in the jewelry shop. They can verify that I own one of those monkeys, so they can give me access to purchase the piece of jewelry that is exclusive for only people that own the monkey, even if they have nothing to do with each other. So these two companies, they didn't have to ask permission to the other party, or talk or ask access to database to see who's verified. Because being in the blockchain, they can verify this themselves. Now, think about the fact that your identity is the same among different websites. And that means that whatever you own is also verifiable by the different website. In the gaming industry, this brings a revolution on add-ons in game sales. Say I am in a game that is a shooting game and I buy a particular rifle. I pay actual money for the rifle, right? Even if it's virtual, it's only for the game. Or, for example, is the avatar. I want to wear a particular hat, etc., etc. So my avatar has these accessories. When I go play another game, if this game is Web3, they can see that I own the gun that I purchased in the other game. And they can allow me to use it in this other game. Same thing, if in the first game I shot in my leg, and they register that my cryptographic identity has an injury on the leg. When I go in the other game, they can see this, and so I should be injured in that game as well. So as much as if my avatar is 180 centimeter tall or 6'2 in American format, I will be able to have the same image, the same color of hair, the same clothing, among the different games that I visit, because the blockchain allow each of these games, which match the website, you know, connect to my profile and see what I own and decide if I can use this thing there. This may allow also if you go shopping for clothing. Once your identity says that your sizes that you need to measure yourself are all set, then you can go through many different shops. And they already know your information, so they can provide you only with a, you know, product that are correct for you. This can apply for credit history when you go shopping for a car. I don't know. You know, once you have an identity and you allow this to be connected to certain information, wherever you go, they can use this information if you allow them to, in order to provide the correct content. So the revolution between the Web 2 and the Web 3 is that now you are part of the mechanics as well. So going to answer your question, if I have something that I'm working on. Yes, it is called SimFly and is an add-on for Flight Simulator. Flight Simulator
so,
is...
What? Sorry, repeat that one more time.
Yeah, SimFly. Sim for simulator, fly because they fly. Flight simulators are application in the computer. I cannot call them games because a game is something you sit down and you play the game. A flight simulator is simulating the actual airplane. So if you don't know which buttons, which and things to move, you cannot even move the airplane from where it is. So it requires studying it. So it's really not much of a game, but more like the real simulation of the airplane. And we hardly know somebody that use Flight Simulator because these people probably spend the whole time playing and, you know, hours every week and don't have a social life much, or they don't share in the social life the fact. But it's a huge niche. Microsoft has the most famous application for Flight Simulation. And they, 2 years ago, celebrated 10 million pilots. So it's not a small number of people. And it's quite an interesting thing because the profile of the person using Flight Simulator, which they're called simmers, is a person of, is not a teenager, is an adult up to 70 years old for retired pilots that want to keep themselves fresh with the things. It requires a very expensive computer, very powerful computer. So it's people that has also the money to purchase those things and a lot of time. So people that, you know, probably are not too busy working, but they have extra time to spend time there. So it's a very particular niche. And they love the idea to pretend to be an actual pilot in an actual commercial airline, for example, so much that they do virtual airlines and they're forced to wake up early in the morning because they have the flight to go from this city to this other city in the correct time. So these people living this second life as a pilot for airplane. And with it is a done that give also all the financial simulation of the air industry. So pilot gets a salary, but you can purchase an airplane, you can purchase an airport. If you purchase an airport, you earn every time an airplane lands or take off because, airport taxes. If you have you're the owner of an airplane, you can rent it out for people to do commercial flights. So there are a lot of aspects that are very interesting and people love. And you use the power of using a set like NFTs is the fact that if they own an airport, we have no control over it. They physically own the NFT asset and they can sell it to somebody else freely outside our own platform because it's something managing the blockchain. So it brings these Web3 powers into a gaming system that existed since 1980s with the first flight simulator. It's very interesting though.
Yeah, I remember Flight Simulator. I think my brother used to play that a lot.
See.
It's a good way to learn. I have a question, but I just lost it. Know we've mentioned NFT a lot. Do you own any NFTs?
I've been given NFT as a present in the past. I honestly thought that it was insane to spend those money to purchase an image of a monkey or similar things, right? In practical terms, so if it's an NFT functioning for a game or other things, I have a few that now they're no more functioning, but they used to work. There is a way to register domain names for Web3 that are as an NFT, and I own a lot of those. So there is a shift that they're trying to make where websites are no more hosted in hosting provider, but they are in the blockchain in what is called IPFS, Interplanetary File System, which is something silly, but practically you store the data on the blockchain and people that visit your decentralized website read the data from the blockchain. And this is an interesting aspect also. It's all in the phase of. Nothing is, like final yet. So we are in the transformation of, and it is a direction that we are moving toward. There is no escape of it, so that's what is going to happen. We are decentralizing, and it is happening with slowly one industry and then another, but is something that like it or not, unfortunately, it's being hit by a lot of bubble scams and other things. So it gave a little bit of a bad name, scare a lot of people away from these technologies. But it happened with most technology. New things, people don't
Yeah.
know. There is always somebody taking advantage of the momentary ignorance of people to, to scam them to. But
Yeah.
yeah.
People are always scared of new technologies anyway until it's popular and bubbles up.
And look what happened with artificial intelligence, which is
Right.
something else I'm working on. My goal is to decentralize artificial intelligence
What
because
does
now
that
is in,
mean?
yeah, because now it's in the hand of some company. When you use ChatGPT, is in the data center of OpenAI. So they can pretty much decide what kind of answer you get or not. In fact, we had a very big example of politically deviated woke AI. Google came out with an AI where white people didn't exist inside, so afraid to offend minorities that they eliminated white people. The founding father of the United States were all black, which would be interesting, but it wasn't the case. So they distort truth in favor of a political agenda because the company or the people educating the artificial intelligence, they choose what the artificial intelligence means. That piece of software doesn't, doesn't reason on its own, even though they're coming close to this possibility as well. But pretty much like a human, if a kid is born in a family that has an ideology, they grow up thinking that this is correct, or what the school is going to bring into the brain of a kid is what they're going to believe for the majority of their life after all, right? So an AI has a very similar behavior, but is much more powerful as a brain. We are going to fall victims of AI. We are, as humans, we are gullible. It's easy to manipulate us. And when you have a brain that has all the knowledge of the humans in one single brain, it can think a million times faster than you can think. Is gonna be able to manipulate you in whatever direction, either commercial, say, I don't say ChatGPT because it's not the case, but an AI that everybody uses, sponsored by a company that sells a certain kind of food. Suddenly, for some reason, everybody start favoring the food because if we can influence people through social media, see what happened with election and other things. There is a little bit more, sorry, passive because in social media, I choose what I read or what I'm not. When it goes to an AI, the people talks to them, people conversate with the AI in order to get the instruction, favor, or like how to do something rather than not. If this AI is deviated and push me subliminally to want to convince me that it can be done so easy that we don't realize even, and then we start changing our life habits. So if it's done for good, welcome. If it's done for bad, oh my God. So it's important to decentralize AI. So no more one single data center in the hands of some people with their own political agenda or ideologies that nobody may, maybe some people cannot agree with. If it's decentralized, it's a mix of everything. So even if you have 1,000 brains, one is totally, with an ideology, another is totally with another, the mix of them all makes, a democratic, say, outcome of the information. So this is a big project I'm working on, right?
Interesting. And as a developer, I'm always interested in like if someone is interested in getting into Web3 development or blockchain technology, are there any programming languages or frameworks that you recommend?
It's a very individual the things. Mostly, for what concern blockchain, Rust is one programming language that is widely used, most innovative blockchain. Golang and Rust, those are the two of choice. For artificial intelligence, is Python. Python is widely used for data science and AI. But honestly, now I'm coding a blockchain in C, and there are no libraries to do this. A library is a set of instructions that is pre-made, so you can just use the instruction to do functions that are more complex. So when you don't have any library available, you need to code all the function by yourself, which is challenging, but is an interesting things. C as a coding language is a very powerful things, means that consume very little processing power in a computer. Think this in, for example, the quality of the code is essential when something scale. Facebook, it was not coded very well at the beginning. It exploded suddenly because a lot of people were onboarding it. They started having servers that they almost fill up a building. They recoded everything. And suddenly, three servers were enough to run the same amount of traffic and people and data that before you need almost a building. Because if the code is written properly, then it can scale and it can fit in smaller devices. So some software only running large computer because maybe there is a particular need or because maybe it's not coded very well. When I start coding, I know I look 25 years old for people looking at me, but I'm 50 years old this year. And when I started coding, the computer were very small and very slow. So you need to pay attention to every particular aspect of how you code a computer in order to get a piece of software running. Nowadays, computers are so powerful and so much memory that even if you write crappy code, it's going to start working anyways. But it's like, not optimizing something just because who cares, right? So I do believe that the important application to scale a lot need to be written in a way that small devices, Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi is this $20 computer that people can purchase and run things on, can support. So that in the case that you have a good piece of software. So when you ask me which are the languages, those that I listed are those used the most, but are not the best to create a high quality product. But yet, most applications run in this with those most blockchains and things.
Well, Roberto, it's been an amazing and enlightening conversation. I appreciate all your knowledge in this area. Before we close it out, is there anything you want to leave the listeners with, anywhere that they can find you or anything you want to promote?
Sure. Maybe if somebody is interested in understanding more, learning more, or has a reason to implement some project that is decentralized, I'm happy to talk with them. And I, encourage people to learn and understand more about this because it's important to understand what is behind what we use, sometime there was this, sorry, I stole another minute when there was this kid using Facebook with his cell phone. So I says, oh, there is internet connection. He says, no. So you're using Facebook. Oh, this is Facebook, it's not internet. So understanding that in order to use Facebook, you need to be connected to the internet was already an extra thing. In a certain way, it's good because as a user, we drive the car. We don't need to know how the engine works, right? It was important to drive it well. But sometimes understanding is important to do things better, to understand what risk we are exposed to, et cetera, et cetera. So for everybody that want to learn more, encourage them to do so. Internet is full of resources to do so. For what concern me, we can leave a link to contact me in my LinkedIn for those that want to. And I'm happy to make new acquaintances. So thank you again for having me on your show. It's been a very pleasant conversation.
Thank you. And for the listeners, thank you for listening. And Roberto's information, as well as American Gypsy Podcast information, will be in the description. As always, you can find us on any podcast platform or AmericanGypsy.com. And you can email AmericanGypsy@gmail.com if you want to be a guest on the podcast. Thank you, Roberto. Thank you for listening. Peace.